Wow. I am very honored to be doing this, and I don't know why I feel a little bit nervous, but I'll be anyway. Okay, let's get started. So my name is Pauline. I live in the Culver City, Culver City, California area, and I am a grateful member of the ACA program. So today I'm going to share my journey, okay? Like how I made it to the ACA program and how I foster my continued growth in this amazing program. Okay. So I always like to hear more like the growth part than the beginning part, but I feel like it is important. And wow, 45 minutes is a long time. So we'll see how far I get. Okay, so here it goes. I was born in a large family, 10 children, 5 boys and 5 girls, and I'm number six. My mother was distracted, attractive, and not really ever present in the home, even when she was home. I was raised by my older sisters. And as a child, what I remember is life was lonely, even with all these siblings. It was fearful and it was uncertain. My older sisters, I have three, did not want to babysit me. Recently, my oldest sister apologized to me because she told me that she bit me on the cheek when I was an infant because she did not want to babysit me that day. And I had heard stories about it here and there, but then she actually like brought it up. And it was like a big thing for her to bring that up. And I just watched her and I really felt like compassion because why was she having to watch me? She was a teenager, but that's what it was. And so then she made up this whole story of how I got this big bite mark on my cheek. At this time, my father was he got like big awards for being the best sharpshooter in the Los Angeles the police department. He was involved in a lot of shooting crimes, and I remember him being pulled like, oh, he was going to be pulled off the street because of this or that. It was a very stressful thing. He was a raging alcoholic, very unsafe because he was a police officer. There was no safe place. The very sound of his truck coming up the driveway of our home would give me an instant stomach ache. And so we never knew what type of mood that he would be in, and that's what this was my childhood home. So a few years back, several of us siblings were starting to take the ancestry.com just kind of for fun. And as the results started coming back, my younger sister and I, our DNA kind of stood out a little different than our siblings. And we would bring it up to my mom, and she'd say, "It's wrong. It's just wrong. Something's wrong," and we would like let it go and everything. And so last year, the beginning of last year, my younger sister, we're 14 months apart, hired a genetic investigator. And within 10 days of that, the DNA revealed that both my younger sister and I were the result of an ongoing affair that my mother had. And so a completely different nationality, a completely different last name. And my biological father was 10 years younger than my mother. And last year, I met two half siblings for the first time. And one of the siblings was born the same year as my sister. They were both married at the time. My bio father passed away in 2011. I never met him. My mother is now 97 years old and is not willing to discuss anything. She has admitted some information here and there, but then quickly goes back, "I just don't remember." So ACA for me, has been a tremendous help in navigating this. So this just happened last year. And however, my younger sister, who has a doctorate in counseling, is finding this most unbearable and unforgivable. And for me, after being in ACA for about 13 years, this information actually made sense to me. My mother was living a secret life. So, as a young child and all through school, teachers and school were my refuge. I loved school. Reading was a joy and an escape for me. My high school teachers prompted me to consider going to university. I was the first sibling to attend university in the family. All the siblings after me have graduate degrees, as I do. I moved out of the house into the dorms and attended university full time, and I worked part time. And this was a very stressful experience because deep down I did not feel that I was smart enough to be there. So at this time, overeating became a vice as I navigated all these changes. And so I was, with my little bit of money, I would check out new weight loss programs at that time. They were costly for me and they really did not work, but I kept trying different ones. This is like I'm like a freshman in college, like my second semester. The last place I tried, I gave them $250 payment down, and it was called Nutrisystem. And I went home that night and I had some clarity of mind. I knew this program was not going to work. And so the next day I decided I would go back to the company. It was at a mall and ask for my money back. They were kind and gave me my money back because they told me it had not been 72 hours, so I got my money back. And so after I got my money, I walked around this mall feeling defeated, believing the constant lies that I told myself that I'll always be fat, that I'm a big loser, and just go get some donuts. And at that mall, I strolled into a nearby bookstore and I found a book with a title called Overeaters Anonymous. That title intrigued me. And after, just glancing through the book, I bought the book. Took it home and I read it cover to cover that night. I wrote to the address on the last page of that book to ask for booklets of meetings in my area. This is 1979. This started my journey to my first 12-step program. And I do not remember actually working the 12 steps when I was in Overeaters Anonymous, but what I do remember, I was told that you write down everything you're going to eat that day, and you call someone in the program and you tell them what you're going to eat that day, and you stick to it no matter what. And you do that every single day. And I did what I was told, and I lost my weight, and I even started taking phone calls from others in the program. And it felt really good to be part of a fellowship of truly honest people that were struggling like I was, and that I wasn't alone. So around this point, I started going to church. And so, but very soon, within months, I met somebody at this church, and he was kind. He was a single father, had two small children. He was involved in the church. And he liked to drink occasionally. I met his family, and they were kind, church-going people. I was 23 and he was 33. It felt good to see what I thought looked like a normal family, and later I found out that my was to be my father-in-law had been a very big drinker and was now religious. So after we were married 18 months, I had my first child, and now we have three children, and he drank more. And I must have told someone my concern because it was a church person that told me about a program called Al-Anon. And so I started going to Al-Anon and I learned about alcoholism and codependency for the first time. I learned about detach with love, and I just was happy to be going to these meetings. And I proceeded to have three more children while always living in a fantasy that things are going to get better. At that time, my husband preferred I stay home. I was at home for 15 years raising children. Now we have six children, and his drinking got worse. As my children started, my youngest started in kindergarten, I started teaching school. I went to work. But just before our 20th year anniversary, we got divorced. So I'm single, have children. The oldest ones were already out of the home. So at this point, I have two children with me. And I started dating soon. I was basically on the hunt for someone to be my next partner because being alone was not an option for me. However, I noticed the guys I was dating were very similar to my ex-husband's personality. And that clarity, that realization brought me a high level of fear, a near panic attack, because I told myself I would rather die than go through that life again. And I remember praying, God, remove my desire to want a partner because I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to choose. So I started therapy. I knew I needed some serious help. I went through therapy, and the very first session, I was given a flyer with ACA information and an address for the meeting, for a meeting that was in the area. I went that same week to my first ACA meeting. That meeting, I had an inner excitement sitting in that chair on that day of that first meeting. I could hardly believe what I was hearing. How did this program know me so well? I had no clue about ACA existing. Where has this been, all my life? I needed this. And I just had this excitement within me, feeling like this is it. This is what I've been looking for. And so that night, my very first night, I bought the red book and I bought the yellow book. And I started attending meetings several times per week. I was told you need to go to six meetings as quickly as you can, and you need to complete the steps with a fellow traveler. And I could not find anyone to go through the 12 steps with. It seemed to me that everybody was looking for someone to go through the steps with. So I just kept going to the meetings. And then after a few months, I just decided that I would start a meeting. And so I was going to start an ACA step study meeting myself. And so I know it was in the red book and it told me how to do it. And I followed the directions and I put it on the website. And then soon after it started, I realized I don't think it was going to work. People would come, they didn't have the books, and it was difficult really to share some of these personal answers to someone who just walked in the meeting for the first time and it was not comfortable, and I was still going to other meetings, my other regular meetings. And after a couple of months, one gal who was coming regularly at that time asked me if we could help each other and do the 12 steps together. I said yes, and I quickly canceled the meeting on the ACA website, and I started meeting with my new fellow traveler every week. We were both new, but we were persistent and we kept at it. And she is my fellow traveler still to this day. So changes, changes were slowly starting to happen. I was reading books. I was pondering what I was reading. This was amazing stuff that I was reading. I was committed to going to three, four meetings a week. I went to ACA retreats right from the beginning. I met people in ACA. I did really move out of isolation. And I was being of service at my meeting. I was doing things at my meeting, and I was utterly grateful for this program. I knew at this point that I could not continue changing. I could never do this alone. I had tried that, and I knew that, isolating myself was not a good thing, and it was something that I should not do, even though there was times where I wanted to do it. It was never successful. I knew that I needed help. I knew I needed a power to help me. And I noticed that at that time that my inner self-talk was starting to be a bit more hopeful, just a little bit. And I knew that I really wanted to make a decision that I would be willing to go to any lengths to keep me on this course of changing my thinking patterns about myself, about other people, and just about life itself. I prayed, I read, I did service, I used the phone. I became a fellow traveler. I welcomed newcomers. I eventually learned to practice meditation. So I can say, I really was at a bottom when I hit ACA. I was at a place where I felt like there's no hope for me and I don't want to live when I found this program. So the question is, like, now, and this is now going on 13 years ago of my beginning life in ACA. And so now, what do I do now as I foster my growth in this program? Because I still attend ACA meetings regularly. And today I attend a in-person meeting. After COVID, the meeting that was my home meeting that I found through one of the retreats that I went to was a wonderful, strong, dynamic meeting. But for some reason, when it went on COVID, it didn't sustain. It didn't stay. Nobody was used to it. There was no, it wasn't like new people were coming in and doing Zoom. It was just all of us old timers trying to do Zoom. And people just kind of fell away over time. And so basically, the meeting just went away. And luckily, my fellow traveler and I would still get together and talk and read and everything. And one day, we said, this is now 2022. People are still wearing masks a lot. And we are now like determined, like we decided we wanted to start a meeting. So she's asking around in her area. She asked at a church. I went to the old original church where we had been meeting. That meeting had been going on in Santa Monica for 23 years at the same location. And when I went there, they said, no, we're not doing that anymore. And I went to another place. This took several months. So we're looking around. We started in January. We finally found a place in July of 2022. At the Share building in Culver City. It's a wonderful big old building that is just like has rooms, and the whole purpose of this big building is meetings. And I had remembered about it. It came to my mind one day when I was driving home from work, and I drove straight to the share building. I walked in and I said, "Can we do an in-person meeting?" And they practically like opened their arms and said, "Yes, we are looking for, in-person meetings to come back," because of course all of them disappeared, and they were installation of like Zoom equipment now was in every room. And I just said, "Listen, I don't want any of that. I don't want it. I don't know. I don't want to be confused with it. I just want to have a regular old meeting like we used to have." And they were like, yes. They were very, very kind. And they didn't charge us rent for like a couple of months, like 3 months till we had money. They were just very kind. And so, so we've been there, and now we're going on 3.5 years, and we averaged about 30 women every Tuesday. It's an all-women's meeting. And so now I look for those, and in-person meetings do work best for me. However, I've become open to Zoom meetings, and working with a lot of online, do an in-person online meeting. So that is, it's a great option, and I know it's here to stay. And however, I really, for me, I need eyeball to eyeball contact, and it really has helped me really break, and will always be a part of my recovery. And we're glad to say that in California now, more meetings are coming back. From my meeting, we have a new Spanish meeting. We have a regular meeting, more meetings in Northern California. So I feel it is slowly coming back, because getting out of isolation is a big part of our recovery. And so that's what's happening. We've had people even move out of the state into smaller towns, and we have supported them in starting meetings in other states. Today at my meeting, most of the gals are willing to stay after the meeting to answer questions and just fellowship. Our meeting never, people never leave right away, and Cher lets us stay there and, just kind of talk. We have a once a month potluck. And it is just a really nice time, really getting to know each other and really making friends. And because there's always new people coming every single week, we get new people, it reminds us to never, ever forget what it was like when we walked into the room for the first time. I always say, when a new person comes and they're foggy minded and they're crying and they can't even talk, I just say, "Just come back. I will look for you next week. Just come back." So after meetings, after I see someone going to meetings for a while, at least six, we might start talking about the 12 steps, and we might start talking about making phone calls to other fellow travelers. There's never chasing, there's never convincing. It's a very personal decision to make to do this work. It's a big commitment. I open up space and time to share my experience, strength, and hope. And I get the opportunity to work the 12 steps with fellow travelers. And every time I do that, it's an amazing experience. It's a different experience. It's another experience to learn the depth of these steps. I feel it in my body and my mind. I get to witness lives being transformed. I get to watch the gals move from a hurting person to a healing person to a helping person, over and over again. It's an experience that cannot be really explained with words. It's an experience that I would want everybody to have that experience. To give away what was given to me. And for me, I feel in serving others as they come into the meeting, I feel that it taps into a love, an unconditional love and light that attracts others. It's an amazing thing to become inwardly aware and illuminated. And working with fellow travelers is how it works for me. So for me, a long-term, and I call what we do emotional sobriety, long-term, solid emotional sobriety comes for me working the 12 steps of ACA, one-on-one with a fellow traveler. And this fellow traveler is willing to commit, willing to work the 12 steps and making it a high priority. So I would like to just take the time now to just kind of like go over the steps with a little different angle and just the core values and the spiritual principles of the 12 steps of ACA. So in step one, we admitted we were powerless over the effects of alcoholism and other family dysfunction, and that our lives had become unmanageable. So step one, it is honesty. It is admitting complete and utter defeat. It is surrendering. We experience like we have no choice. This is it. This is it. This is the last door on the block, kind of thing. And the spiritual principle for step one is powerlessness and surrender. Step two, so beautiful. Just as we're there waving the white flag of surrender, what comes is power in step two. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, to clarity. So step two is hope, hope, hope to believe in a power greater than myself that I have access through my own choice. And the spiritual principle of step two is open-mindedness and clarity. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand God. Step three, the word is trust. Decide to commit to be aligned with this power that step two talked about. This power is real, and I can now choose to access this power. And the spiritual principle of step three is willingness and accepting help. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. The word for step four is courage to name and analyze obstacles that are blockages to this power that we are learning about, to accept what is true. And the spiritual principles of step four are self-honesty and courage. Step five, admitted to God, to ourselves, to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. And the word for five is integrity, to confess, to reveal all obstacles, to reveal secrets, disclose. Can be willing to reduce and eliminate these obstacles. And the spiritual principles of five are honesty and trust. Step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And step six is willingness. The word is willingness. We list our shortcomings. We list our defects of character. We list our behaviors that no longer serve us. And we prepare ourselves for removal of these. And the spiritual principle is willingness. Step seven, humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings. The word for seven is humility. We use prayer, accountability to request removal of our shortcomings. We can be willing to change. The spiritual principle of step seven is humility. Step eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step eight is compassion. Identify, make a list of harms done by us to others, willing to repair damages. Spiritual principle, willingness and self-forgiveness. Step nine, made a direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Step nine, the word is justice. Change behavior, repair damage, embrace forgiveness, create healing for ourselves and others. The spiritual principle for step nine is forgiveness and courage. Step 10, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, we promptly admit it. The word for 10 is discipline. Continuous process of removing obstacles, confessions, making amends, being of service, doing spot check when needed. Are we getting bothered by something or someone? We look inward, not outward. The spiritual principle is honesty and discernment. Step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand God, praying only for the knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry that out. The word for 11 is awareness. We use power and meditation for one reason, to improve our conscious contact with the God of our understanding and to develop a consistent practice. The spiritual principle for 11 is seeking and listening. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to others who still suffer and to practice these principles in all our affairs. The word for 12 is service. Daily practice of love and charity to enlarge our consciousness, compassion, which fosters our desire to be of service to humanity. The spiritual principle of step 12 is love and self-love. I want to thank you for allowing me to be of service to you. Thank you. That is all.